I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
If money affects your life in any way, Money Making Sense will talk about it. Be financially healthy, wealthy, and wise. Here's your host, Heather Kelly.
Welcome to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today, we're going to talk about debt and credit, and why are those so important, especially in our society. Joining me today is Jerry Detweiler. She is an education director for NAV. So welcome to the show, Jerry.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I do want to start with, our society is so dependent on credit. Your credit rating affects how much interest you pay on a mortgage or cars insurance, even down to a student loans. But this wasn't always the case. I mean, I go back to the 40s and 50s where people were like, I need to pay for my house with cash. Now, granted, they were only $3,000 at the time. But if you think about the American spirit, and it was all about making it on your own, and, you know, the pioneers, God forbid, they would put anything on credit and have to deal with it later. When did this change in our society, and why is it now such an overriding policy?
Yeah, it's fascinating because many of us are familiar with FICO scores. But what we don't realize is that the Fair Isaac score initially was created to help retailers target customers. And then it shifted into point of sale credit approvals. So this was in the late 1950s when Diners Club was initiated, and then retailers started to offer the ability to buy something now and pay for it later. And the FICO score was actually developed to help make those quick decisions. And I would say it's been pretty successful because FICO scores impact our lives in so many ways. And I have over the years seen very generational differences and approaches to credit where I might talk to someone who's much older who says, I'm not going to go into debt. I don't use, you know, I don't like credit cards. I don't like debt. And as opposed to someone of younger generations, and the statistics bear this out, who feel much more comfortable with it. So the further, you know, the further we get in our consumer culture, I think it is, the easier it is for us to think about just buying something and paying for it later.
Yeah, and our technology is not helpful in this area either, because nowadays it's all on your phone. So you go into a store and you just swipe your phone, which purchases the item on a credit card. But if that's not painful to people, when people hand over actual cash and money, that hurts because nothing's coming. You know, you hand over $5 and maybe you get 20 cents or nothing at all. That's a little bit painful. But when you just swipe stuff and the credit card goes back in your wallet or the phone goes back in your pocket, that doesn't hurt.
Absolutely. And I don't know how many, I don't think my daughter who's graduating from college, I don't think she would, she's very good at math. She's gone further than me in math, but I don't think she'd know how to balance checkbook. So there's a much more of a, we're going to just track what we've spent and pay our bills approach than perhaps a planning approach to money that may have existed before when credit was not as easily available. And there's some really interesting research around this that just the task of tracking your finances, like writing down what you spend. And we're not talking about just loading automatically into an app, but actually taking a moment to write down and keep track of what you spend leads to positive behaviors, not just on the financial side where your finances can be more organized, but there's been some research where it led to people exercising better and getting more sleep and eating more healthy. So If you approach it from a positive standpoint and just don't say, oh, budget, oh, that sounds awful, but rather a plan that is going to help put me in control of my money and help me lead a better life, then maybe it's a little bit more appealing.
Yeah, because I don't think people realize just tracking what you're putting on your phone, essentially. People don't actually have control. All they're doing is going, oh, yeah, I already spent it. As opposed to before you spend any of that money, you write down how much money you bring in from your paychecks, and then I call it allocating. I don't say budget because, like you said, it's like budget is like diet. It's a bad word. So I say allocate my money, which is going to go there anyway. You already know that you're going to go to the grocery store once a week and spend a couple hundred dollars for family groceries. You already know that. So, but just write it down and you can see it.
Yes. And then the next step, of course, is the planning step where you're actually planning how you're going to allocate your money. So the first is acknowledging how you're currently spending it. And that's writing it down. I've done this a few times in my life where I've actually carried around a notebook and written down every single thing I spent and done it in a pencil and paper to keep track of where I'm spending. And it's always taught me something about where my money's going. And it's always made me think about purchases before I make them. When you know you're going to be accountable for even to yourself about what you're spending your money on, it does make a difference. It's tedious, I will admit. But it is a good step. And I can tell you over the years, I've talked to so many people struggling with debt. And one of the things that I find that many people don't even know is how much they owe to whom and what the cost is. So if I just say, hey, you need to make a list of all your debts, the interest rate, the minimum payment, and the current balance, that's sometimes a very difficult step because we don't really want to know sometimes, right? It's better like, well, I don't really know. I don't have to acknowledge it. But that is the first step in any kind of debt recovery is writing that down. And similarly, I like what you say about allocating your funds. That's another important part because then you make decisions about where the money can have the most impact on your life.
One thing about the FICO scores that you mentioned, I'm not sure a lot of people know that really came into being right after the Great Recession that we had. Employers, many of them started using your FICO scores as just deciding whether you were a good employee or not. Now, I am very, very much against that. I get why a mortgage company would want to know if you're a, you know, financial risk. But just because you may have struggled in the past or you're still trying to recover, you know, from an earlier financial disaster has no impact on whether I'm a good worker or not. And so having employers use FICO scores is absolutely asinine to me.
Well, let me clarify that employers generally don't use credit scores. They use the credit report. So they may pull the actual report as opposed to a score. And in some senses, that's a little bit better because it gives the full data and not just a number. But on the other hand, it gives them a lot of information. It tells you them your credit card balances. It tells them if you had an account that went to collections. It tells them if you've been through bankruptcy. And there are some states who have restricted the use of credit reports in employment purposes. But there's almost always exemptions carved out. And I have similar concerns to you because someone who, for example, has filed for bankruptcy because they had terrible medical debt, maybe they didn't have good insurance. Maybe the insurance didn't cover it. There could be any number of reasons. Or perhaps they lost their job due to their illness and then they couldn't pay their medical bills. Doesn't seem fair to me that they wouldn't get a chance to get a job that could help them take care of that and get back on their feet financially. So I also have serious concerns. And that's something that state legislatures have looked at in the past. And so the only thing I can recommend to consumers is if this is happening to you, talk to your, let your legislators know why you're concerned about it. And perhaps they will join other states that are restricting in a few cases, banning the use of credit report data in employment decisions.
We do need to take a break. When we come back, we'll go more into a personal level about that debt that you've been talking about, how we can help people maybe not get there, or if they're already there, get themselves out of bad debt. So we'll be right back with Jerry Detweiler. She's an education director for NAB.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that if it affects your life in any way money-wise, we're talking about it. And today we're talking about credit and debt and what that means to your life. Joining me today is Jerry Detweiler. She's an education director for NAV. Welcome back to the show, Jerry.
Thank you.
In that first segment, we did talk about why credit is so important in our society and sort of how it sort of came along that way, because it didn't used to be. Go back 70 years and nobody wanted to be in debt or put something on credit. So now it's just very prevalent in our society. And for a good 25, 30 years, it seems like it's just getting worse every single year, sans the pandemic. I mean, this year is just an unusual year. But even before that, people were struggling, or they had this, I want it now. Like, ooh, I want that and I want it now and I'm not going to wait. So they just put everything on credit. They max out their cards. They're living well beyond their means. And now they're in trouble. Maybe they have to file for bankruptcy. So how do we prevent that to start with?
Well, first of all, an interesting trend through the 2020, according to Experian data, is that for the first time since 2012, credit card debt went down overall. So that's fascinating to me that we actually saw a lull in credit card debt. I would kind of think that with people stuck at home, there might be more of that online shopping, and there was in certain demographics. But for many people, we did see that number go down. Now, what we saw go up in 2020 included student loans, number one, mortgages, and personal loans. And so Experian reports that we do have a record of almost $15 trillion in outstanding consumer debt at the end of 2020. $15 trillion, that's a lot of money. Now, that doesn't mean that it's untenable for people. You know, you may have a mortgage that you can afford just fine. It gives you a great home for your family to live in. But when it gets to the point where you're struggling and worrying about paying bills, and I do think we'll see more of that, even as the economy kicks back, hopefully later in 2021, we will see more of that. And one reason is that certain debts, for example, student loans have been paused, federal student loans. So many borrowers haven't had to make payments on those loans. So when they start making those payments, they may find it harder to make other payments like their credit cards, mortgage, auto loans, or even their rent and other expenses. So when I talk to consumers, the first step is what we've talked about a moment ago, which is taking that assessment and really taking a place to write down, here's what I owe, here's the interest rate, here's the monthly payment. And here's another tip. On your credit card statement, whether you look at it online or they mail it to you in the mail, there is a number on there. It's an amount that tells you how much it would cost to pay off that credit card in 3 years or less. And so I encourage you to also write that number down in the column and then say to yourself, realistically, could I stop charging on that credit card and just make that 3 year payment amount every month until this card was paid off? And if you can do that, you can probably DIY your get out of debt journey. You can probably just put those payments on auto pay and stop charging on the credit card and get it paid off in those 3 years. But if you look at it and say, you know what, I really can't afford that. I'm going to have to use my credit cards, or I'm going to have to make the minimum payment sometimes. Then that's when I suggest reaching out to a credit counseling agency and getting some help. And for free, they can help you assess your situation and see if a payment plan is in order.
With those credit card agencies, it's the consolidated debt ones that concern me, because some of them go, oh yeah, we'll take care of that. It'll just be one lump payment. You know, you send your money to us, we'll take care of everything else. But then if they're bad consolidated debt companies, they don't pay anything off. They're just taking your money. And then 2-3 years down the road, all of a sudden you get notices like, hey, you haven't paid this money and your credit rating is now 300, 400 because you haven't actually made any payments that the consolidated debt people said they would do for you.
Yeah. And there is a lot of confusion in this industry because it's not clear sometimes what these companies are actually doing. So there's two flavors of this kind of assistance. One is with a generally nonprofit, reputable credit counseling agency, and they are regulated at the state level. The IRS got involved a decade ago and put some of them out of business because they were abusive and not helping consumers. So you have your nonprofit credit counseling agencies, and you can go to something like the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, their website, and find agencies who are members, and you're probably going to be just fine working with one of those agencies. You are going to make one payment to them, and they'll pay each of your creditors. They generally don't truly consolidate the debt, though. They're not paying it off. They're just helping you get on a payment plan and stick to it. And that's usually has a positive impact on credit scores over the long run if you stick with that payment plan. The other flavor, though, is exactly what you're talking about, and that's where they make a promise that they're going to help you get out of debt. And what they do is they tell you to make a payment, perhaps to them or perhaps to some kind of a escrow account, and they tell you to stop making your payments on your credit cards. And then you stop making the payments, and then the goal is to hopefully negotiate a settlement of that debt sometime in the future. So let's say you owe $10,000. They're going to try to get the collection agency to settle for $2,000. And there's no guarantee that will happen. The creditor could sue you in the meantime, and you could end up in court and even filing for bankruptcy. So it is an approach that has its place in all of this world, but you have to be very, very careful. So what I would look for is my first step is to go with a reputable nonprofit credit counseling agency that is affiliated with something like the National Foundation for Credit Counseling. And that would be my very first call.
That sounds good. I've just heard those horror stories with some of the debt consolidation people.
Yeah. And sometimes they get paid and then you end up in bankruptcy anyways, right? And you could have used that money in other ways.
Exactly. And you may wind up having to pay court costs too on top of that.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. What else should we know about if we're already in financial trouble? Like, where can we go to help?
Yeah. So definitely talk to a credit counseling agency. If things are severe and you're missing payments, you're getting calls from collection agencies, I would talk to a consumer attorney who is involved in bankruptcy to at least find out what your options are. Talking to a bankruptcy attorney doesn't mean you have to file for bankruptcy, but what they can do is help answer those questions that are no doubt keeping you up at night, which is, what can they do to me? You know, what am I going to lose? Can they come after X or Y? Can they tell my employer about my debt? Are they going to garnish my wages? Those things are incredibly, incredibly stressful. And so a bankruptcy attorney can at least help you evaluate the situation and see what's at stake. Some people don't have that much to lose. There's not that much to go after. It's a term that's loosely called judgment proof. It's not really a legal term, but it means that even if they sued you, there's not much they can go after. And those consumers might be able to negotiate, like we just talked about, legitimately negotiate a settlement where you pay, you know, 10% or 20% of the debt and you're done with it and you put it behind you. Other people may have to worry about, you know, things like losing their house, losing their car, losing bank accounts, things that they need. And so in those cases, bankruptcy can sometimes help protect that while they work out deals with their creditors.
We're going to take one more break. When we come back, I want to go into, let's not get there. Let's not get to the point where we have to call the credit counseling or possibly a bankruptcy attorney. So we'll be right back with Jerry Detweiler. She's an education director for NAB. Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today we're talking about debt and credit. When is it good? Is it ever good? And when is it really bad? Joining me today is Jerry Detweiler. She is the education director for NAB. So Jerry, walk us through how to not get into debt, because right now society says, credit, put everything on credit. If you want it, take it. No problem. Just pay for it later. But that gets a lot of us into trouble, as we sort of discussed in that last segment. So what can we do to avoid getting into bad financial straits?
Well, certainly allocating your spending is a great start, right? If you have a plan for how you're going to spend your money, you're less likely to spend it in ways that get you in trouble because you know where it's going and how much you can afford to spend. But a couple of tips I'll also give. I remember interviewing once a bank executive, and he told me he had given a credit card to his daughter for college, and he told her it's for emergencies, and if you can eat it, drink it, or wear it, it's not an emergency. And so that's kind of a good rule of thumb that if you are in trouble, you need to stop digging, of course, stop digging the hole. And so you want to switch to a debit card for your spending. I'm a big fan of credit cards. They are the safest way to pay. They can earn your rewards. But if you're running up debt, then you switch to a debit card because that will instantaneously take your purchases out of your account that's linked, and you won't be able to run up a balance that you can't repay. And then I would, again, assess where the debt is and really focus, not just looking, when you look at your credit card statement, don't just look at what you spent and how much you owe, but always remember to also look at that number that I mentioned earlier. Ideally, you want to pay it, and that's the 3-year payment plan. So ideally, you want to pay off your credit card in full each month. That helps you avoid interest, gives you some float on the lender's, the issuer's money, and probably earns you some rewards like cash back or points for travel, etc. But if you can't, you do want to keep an eye on that 3-year number because that's going to help you keep an eye on whether that spending is affordable. So if you see that 3-year number says it's going to be $450 a month to pay off this balance for 3 years, and you realize, you know what, I don't have a budget for that, then you know you really want to cut back and think about it differently. If it's a smaller amount and you think it's affordable, that's a different story.
Right. Let's say the minimum payment was $100, but in order to pay that off in 3 years, as you said, they're recommending $450. Yeah, I can't afford the $450, but maybe I can afford $225.
And that's fine as a means toward getting out of debt. But be very, very, very careful about minimum payments because they will stretch out your debt for decades. And that figures also on your credit card statement. It tells you how long it will take it to pay it off if you just pay the minimum payment at your current balance. And the numbers are shocking. I mean, the credit card minimum payments are so small that you can stay in debt for decades. Yeah. So you definitely don't want to think about it in terms of minimum payments. You want to think about it in terms of pay. If you have debt that you're trying to pay off over time, in terms of how much can I pay each month to try to get this paid off as quickly as possible. Another tip is if you have multiple credit cards, you're probably going to be best off tackling the one with the highest interest rate first. But if you have a card with a small balance and you just want to knock that one out, get it over with, pay off, I have absolutely no problem with that. I think that's the avalanche method versus the snowball method, which is where you pay off the highest interest rate first. But either way, you want to really focus. What I recommend is focusing on getting one debt paid off at a time and just making the minimums on the other so that you can feel some accomplishment and you can also see some results.
Not that I disagree with paying the highest interest rate first, because that will kill you in the long run. But it could take you such a long time to pay off that highest interest rate balance first, because maybe it's a larger debt, that sometimes start feeling depressed about, it's never going to go away. So if you need a little bit of an emotional boost and you do have a very low balance on something, just pay it off as best you can in 3 or 4 payments and then cut up that credit card.
Yes.
Put it away. But now that's gone and you go, oh, okay, that's one less card that I have to pay off. So, and it makes you feel better. And then maybe go tackle the one that has a bit of a higher interest. But I did want to go back just so people understand why it takes so long to only pay the minimum payment. If it is $100 minimum payment every month, $75 of that $100 is interest. So only $25 of it is actually tackling the amount you owe for whatever you paid. So if I went and bought a whole new wardrobe for $5,000 and I'm paying $100, I'm only paying $25 a month toward that $5,000 wardrobe, and the other $75 is all going to interest.
That's right. So it's exactly the opposite of buying something on sale or getting a good deal, right? Because instead of paying less for the item, you're paying more for the item over time. So on your statement, it's going to tell you, here's how much you paid in interest this month. And just do a close your eyes for a moment, do a mental exercise and picture yourself writing a check. Maybe you don't write checks anymore. Picture it where you're writing a check to the credit card issuer for that amount just to pay them for the privilege of using the money. Not to pay for a purchase you made, but just to pay them. And maybe that will help you start realizing that you are paying them this money each month. It's not going towards your purchases. It's not enhancing your life. It's just going from your bank account to their bank account. And that can help you think about it a little bit differently.
Okay. So basically what we're saying, I think, is don't live outside your means. If you have a certain amount of income, and it's paying off your mortgage and your groceries and, you know, whatever necessities you have, don't go out and buy a new car or a boat or the wardrobe that you don't need. I love that the person told you, if you can eat it or drink it or wear it, do not put it on a credit card. Don't buy it.
Yeah. And I don't want to provide any kind of guilt and shame for people who are struggling, you know, in this economy in particular. If you've had loss of job, health insurance, health issues that you can't cover. There may be very valid reasons why you've had to turn to credit cards, you know, just to put food on the table or to get gas in the car to get to work or school. So if you are struggling, the most important thing I can recommend is to find help. You know, these credit counseling agencies are there to at least help you figure out if you can get on a payment plan. And bankruptcy attorneys, I've met many of them. They're very compassionate people. They're often very aware of the struggles that many families go through. And then the other thing is there are some great communities online where you can get support from other people who are trying to tackle debt. And you can talk about your strategies, celebrate their wins, let them celebrate with you when you have small wins. And that can be another way to feel supported through this.
Anything else you want us to know about either not getting into debt in the first place, or if you're already there, how to get help?
I would just say becoming conscious about this is often the hardest step. So really figuring out what you owe and how you're going to tackle it can be very overwhelming and stressful. Debt is stressful. But again, there are resources out there. So don't feel like you have to go it entirely alone. It may take a little while to find the right solution for yourself. But definitely reach out and don't suffer in silence. I've talked to so many people who just, they feel so much guilt and shame. They aren't sleeping. They may be even having suicidal thoughts. And, you know, you can cope with debt. There are ways to do it. You just have to find the right solution.
Jerry Detweiler, again, you are the education director for NAV. And if people have more questions or maybe they want to get help from you, where can they go?
Yes, I love to answer credit questions. You can find a lot of my articles, which are more small business related, on the NAV blog, nav.com/blog, or you can visit Ask Jerry, Jerry with a G, GERRI.com, and I love to answer credit questions.
Great. Thank you so much, Jerry.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thanks for listening. You can email me with any questions or topics you want to hear about at hkelly@ksl.com. That's hkelly@ksl.com. And because this is Money Making Sense, you can subscribe for free on Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast, and you'll never miss another episode.
Thanks for being a Money Making Sense listener. Follow your common sense on the social media, Money Making Sense, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com. or wherever you get your podcasts.